AM 910 WJCW Tri-Cities Talk Radio. It's now time for Dr. Dean Baird from Mountain Empire Animal Hospital and his pet Puri.
All righty, we're talking here. Don't worry about that, Mr. Producer. We'll get in here in time for everything here. Now he's checking a little bit with the headphones here. A little bit of housekeeping. Every Monday about this time, we check in with Dr. Dean Baird from Mountain Empire Animal Hospital with pet Puri. He gives us great tips as pet owners to make sure that our pets stay happy and healthy. And, of course, it all falls back onto us because they own us. Right, Dr. Dean? Good morning to you.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, Carl. I think you've got that. I think you've assessed that accurately. Let's put that
all way. Right. Well, very good. I like to hear validated and verified by a professional in the field there, too. So, one thing that came across our desk, and I noticed it came across your desk as well, that I thought we could talk about today, and that is the annual drop for rabies prevention that the Tennessee Wildlife Federation puts on. So tell us a little bit about this. Why do they do this, Dr. Dean? Obviously, these are little pellets that they drop, okay, to help prevent the spread of rabies. How does that happen?
Right. It's done by the USDA
okay.
Wildlife Services Program. They do it every fall. And it's a oral rabies vaccine for raccoons.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably because the majority of the wildlife rabies cases are raccoons. Although I thought, I don't have the updated numbers. At one time, skunks were.
I was thinking that too.
But that's been changing because North Carolina and Virginia have had more rabies from raccoons than mm-hmm. Tennessee has. And it may be that that's changing because of just migration of the disease into the state. And we've always had raccoons with rabies.
Sure.
Plus, you know, raccoons are really more aggressive animals normally anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know all of the dynamics behind why they're doing it with raccoons. And it may also be that they're just able to get an effective vaccine for raccoons.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to skunks and mm-hmm, other.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that by providing an oral vaccine for raccoons, it's going to help reduce the number of cases of rabies overall
mm-hmm.
because you're getting to one of the species that is a natural reservoir for rabies and one of the species that has a large number of cases in that species, which is raccoons. And rabies can be any mammal,
mm-hmm.
but you're not going to find it very much in rodents, although they can get it. And even if they do get it, they're not usually at risk for spreading it, you know, because they're on the end of the food chain.
Right.
But the species that we really have trouble with are skunks, raccoons, foxes, coyotes, and bats.
Mm.
And you got to remember bats because mm-hmm. people don't always think about bats being
man, lots of folks have, no offense to the folks, have bats in their homes, you know?
Oh, yeah.
In the attic.
You can have a house in pretty good shape and still have a problem getting bats in the top of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they don't have to have a very big hole to get into. So, at any rate, what the details of it are that the USDA began on or about October 3rd, which would have been a week ago today, and they're going to be doing the drops by air, I guess, with helicopters and airplanes and that type
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah.
Over several counties in East Tennessee,
right.
Not just Northeast Tennessee. Actually, I've got the map.
If you want okay. to see
it. It goes even down into North Georgia and Northeast Alabama. And in our area, it's going to include portions of very eastern Greene County, Washington mm-hmm. County, Unicoi County, Sullivan County, Carter County, and Johnson County. And there's a picture on the mailer thing of these little baits is probably the best way to describe them. They're a kind of a cube looking deal with a plastic cover on them, and they've placed material on them to make them real attractive to raccoons. So they're kind of oily and greasy and stinky. And
you piqued my interest there.
Raccoon across the continent.
Sounds like
there.
East Tennessee cuisine, doesn't it?
It's like, that smells. Sounds delicious.
And oh, well, didn't think about going that way with that.
Possum on the half shell. With,
and anyway, where'd you say they were dropping these?
Let's move forward.
We're all over there. I don't know what you're going to do with him, but
I don't know.
I guess we'll see when that happens. So the point is that they could be eaten by pets, particularly dogs that are indiscriminate eaters, which seems to be most dogs.
Hmm.
And the USDA says, as they've said every year, that it shouldn't be harmful to dogs other than it might make them have temporary vomiting or diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many dogs that eat things that have temporary vomiting or diarrhea, it might be hard to know.
Yeah.
But if your dog doesn't do that and it goes outside, that could be the case.
Mm-hmm.
The USDA also says that if you have to handle them, to wear gloves. I don't really know that they're that dangerous, but still, that's what they recommend. Yeah,
greasy, for one thing. There.
Well, they may be greasy, and they say, you know, you pick them up and chunk them deeper in the woods, I guess is the idea.
And you said it had some sort of an odorific sort of thing that would attract.
Yeah, because they're trying to attract the raccoons to eat them, you know. And they've got a combination of something sweet plus oily, fishy smell. Boy, that really attracts me, doesn't it, too?
Yeah. I don't know. Alex got his eyebrows raised over there.
I guess
I'll be
Alex,
on the lookout.
maybe he might have to make sure Alex doesn't start hoarding these baits, Carl.
We just need to keep him,
have a problem.
Keep him indoors until the 15th. Okay?
No, my Etsy store is just going to open up.
The mailer says that they're going to do it through the 21st. So you've got 2 weeks of dealing with him.
All right. Nice. Well,
or thereabouts.
We'll do a Hannibal Lecter over his mouth. How's
finger
that?
Licking good for one of them.
We could put a cage muzzle on him.
Let's move forward.
So move forward. So that's the story with what's going on with the oral. It's called the Wildlife Services Oral Rabies Vaccination Program.
Mm-hmm.
And with the mailing we got, there was a phone number you could call. I don't know if I need to give that out
necessarily,
but you could find it on the USDA if you needed to do it.
Okay. Very
good. So, you know, I tend, is what I should say, to speak relatively frequently about rabies anyway.
Which you should, and we appreciate.
So that's what I wanted to bring up so everybody would know that that's going on. Since we're already talking about rabies, and we've probably not got...
We've got a few minutes
left. I guess we can talk about it a little bit more.
Okay.
And say that this is a good time for everybody to be reminded that of all the diseases that we talk about on this program, rabies is the most serious one.
100%
fatal. And unless
fatal.
Something changes, it will always be the most serious disease that we talk about. Because rabies is a... not statistically... I guess I can make a comment about that in a minute, but it is practically a 100% fatal disease of all mammals. And the reason I said that's not true statistically is that there have been some human cases of rabies where people have survived, albeit as a vegetable. And I don't know for how long they survived having an active infection with rabies, but it's a neurotropic virus, which means it affects the brain. And as a matter of fact, that's why diagnosis is so difficult, because it can only be diagnosed definitively by examining the brain tissue of an animal to see if they've had rabies or not, and you can't do that if they're alive.
Right.
Which makes it even more problematic,
of
course. So in people, we really kind of have to be bare bones about explaining to people that don't want to get their pets vaccinated for rabies, because there are plenty of them, that it puts anybody around that animal at risk for potentially being exposed to rabies.
Right.
If for no other reason, because of what we talked about a minute ago about the bats. Because like Carl said, you can get bats in your house. You not even know the bats are there.
That's right.
And if the bats move from the area where they came in and where they're nesting in the house and get in another portion of the house and you get exposed to them, you could be potentially somebody that gets rabies. That's a really scary thought.
So that's the question I was going to ask. As a indoor cat owner, you know, I have two indoor cats. They've been vaccinated. Is that something that somebody needs to do every year? Because
they need to do it whenever they're due. You can get a 3-year rabies vaccine for cats and dogs if they're not overdue for their last vaccine. So let's take it from when they're a kitten or a puppy.
Right.
The first time you vaccinate them, they're only going to be protected for a year.
Right.
Regardless of what vaccine you use, because the immune system won't protect them for any longer than that. If you get them vaccinated with a 3-year vaccine when they're due, then they can be protected for 3 years. So it is really important to vaccinate cats and dogs for rabies, even if they're indoors.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I think a lot of people, including myself,
and I tell people this all the time. Plus, it's a state law in Tennessee. It doesn't matter whether they're indoor or outdoor. And one of the reasons that it's a law is because of the description that I just gave you about what they're at risk for if they're inside, and what that in turn can lead the people inside with them to be at risk for.
Right. Okay, yeah, because that's the thing. A lot of people, including myself, think, oh, well, they never go outside, so I'm not going to worry about it. And that's something that, you know, not even thinking about the indoor bats that find their way into your place, or like even a raccoon that kind of finds his way into your house, or a squirrel or something like that.
You need to put your food up more often.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no food left at my house, just so you know. There's
you know no, what hat he's got says I can.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah,
does,
I think
that doesn't mean leave food.
That, yeah. That just means he puts up food in, yeah. in the
I can't.
Fall.
Yeah, that's what that means.
Yeah.
And then he eats it all before the next
Sunday,
right?
That's it. So, yeah, definitely opened my eyes this morning, because I was one of the people to think, oh, well, they're inside, so I don't need to do that.
A lot of people think that, yeah. Which is the reason I specifically said what I just did about
okay,
that.
I'm glad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have another somewhat selfish almost reason, and that is we have situations where people bring in animals to the hospital for us to work on that don't want to vaccinate them, so that puts us at risk.
Right,
because
sure.
If we get bitten, now we're not automatically going to assume that this animal's got rabies, because
right.
It probably doesn't, but we don't know.
Ounce of prevention, good grief.
And when we've gotten pretty strict about requiring that those animals be vaccinated for us to be working on them. Of course, we run into emergencies where they haven't been vaccinated and you got to take care of them. But for the most part, we're really trying to make sure that they are and they're vaccinated for rabies and they're up to date vaccinated for rabies.
Back when, didn't there used to be a series of painful injections as a treatment for someone who had been bitten?
And there still is a series of injections. They're probably not as painful as they used to be because mm-hmm. they were intra-abdominal at one time.
Yeah.
Now these vaccines are given just like any other vaccine in your shoulder.
So they're still available.
And if you've been exposed and you have the potential exposure to something that's rabid, then, health department and your physician are going to recommend you take post-exposure rabies vaccine is what it is. It's still done pretty commonly, and they're going to recommend it if you've been exposed or if you could be exposed and don't know.
Does that have any lingering side effects or anything to the individual?
That's probably going to depend on the person, and you talk to the doctor about that.
Okay, all right. Didn't mean to ask you a person question there, being a veterinarian. So any other points that we need to put a fine point on about rabies?
We could talk two or three programs on rabies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I could get pretty worked up about rabies, as you know. But for today,
yes. Frothing at the mouth talking about rabies.
And next time I'll get me one of those I can hats.
There you go.
All right.
To let Alec know that I can talk.
Bring your mason jars too, okay, just in case. Dr. Dean Baird with Mountain Empire Animal Hospital joins us each Monday with his show Petpourri for us pet owners with great tips to make sure that our pets stay happy and healthy. And it's always up to us too. Mountain Empire Animal Hospital is open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. And what's the phone number, Dr. Dean, in case people want to give you a call?
282-3771.
There you go. We'll talk to you next Monday.